Roberts, the illustrious from high above Wyoming mainstream media. Joined by Mr. Misdemeanor himself, the Saratoga Sledgehammer. Starting your day the right way on the Independence Network. It's time for the morning show with your hosts, David Iverson and Jailbird Joey.
Good morning and welcome to the morning show on the Independence Network. I'm David Iverson in the driver's seat this morning with my pal Joey Corrente. Joey, you have any snow on the ground down there in Saratoga?
No, it's actually terribly pleasant now, been pretty pleasant for a couple of days. And I hear that's kind of been the standard across the state. In fact, I heard a rumor you were out on a little motorcycle with a chickie this week.
I was out on a little motorcycle. Well, not really a little motorcycle, but the lovely Christine and I got the motorcycle out and rode around. It's been actually pretty beautiful up here. Yesterday it was, yesterday was kind of cold, but the day before was in, the low 60s.
Yeah, you can't argue with that, but it is Wyoming, so get ready for this weekend. Probably have another series of storms coming in. I know we're supposed to get some weather. I don't know how bad it's going to get, but they do have snow predicted. So there's a history in Wyoming. I mean, I remember that they had graduations at the University of Wyoming shut down in late May for blizzards. So anybody who's lived here for more than 5 seconds knows. You don't like the weather, give it 5 minutes. And if you're enjoying the weather, be prepared because it can always change.
There was one Memorial Day weekend. We as a family went up to our cabin. At the time, we owned a sporting goods store, so we always got out of town during the fishing derby. Well, Friday was beautiful. Saturday was beautiful. Sunday was kind of rainy, which that's okay. I mean, just hang out in the cabin. It's better than being downtown. And then we woke up Monday morning to 3.5 feet of snow and almost didn't leave the cabin, which would have been perfectly okay with me. But Memorial Day weekend, just about got snowed in. So springtime in Wyoming, you can always expect at least one good snowstorm. And it looks like we might be in the middle of one.
Yeah, I don't doubt that, but it's kind of like what we do for a living. Everything seems to be going smoothly and sounds and feels real nice for a minute. Then all of a sudden, what's really going on comes to light, and it's a pain in the butt. And I think we got a couple of those lined up for today. What do you say we get to it?
Yeah, so where do you want to start? You want to start with the University of Wyoming or Moonbeam Gordon and his tax bills?
We'll go into the university because that is a perfect example of, no, the weather's great here. Everything's fine, and there's really a blizzard going on.
Well, if you paid attention during the budget session, one of the things that got cut is the Department of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at the University of Wyoming. And actually, they didn't cut the program because the legislature doesn't have the ability to do that, but they did cut the funding to it. And Joey, you were watching it in the Senate. How big of a battle was there about the stupid DEI stuff?
Well, contrary to popular op-eds in recent days, there wasn't a whole lot of divisiveness, but there was quite a bit of debate because the defunding of DEI came in a block of three amendments to the budget in the Senate that defunded DEI, got rid of the gender studies program, and had the university revert back from block grant funding. So they would have to do line item budgeting like just about every other department in the state. And all three of those passed in the Senate. So I think by the time they got to DEI, most of the arguments had been made. It was obvious who was against it, who was protecting socialism, liberalism, insanity, and their sacred cow, the university, but they just didn't have the votes to kill it. Of course, it went immediately on the chopping block in the joint conference committees. The funding for gender studies was immediately restored. The conversation about Wyoming universities, just like the K-12 and the community colleges being on a block grant, didn't even happen publicly. They just said, nope, we're not going to do it. There's a reason why we want the university to be able to spend with impunity. But I think, and I believe I prognosticated about this a little in week four when we were down there on the morning show, that DEI was left on the table knowing that Governor Gordon would probably line item veto that, because you can do it in a way, another BS Gordon type of way, that makes it look potentially, or at least you're saying, it's not political, it's not social, this is purely financial. This would stop certain grants from being available to the University of Wyoming. But what I said then was, first of all, none of this stuff says you can't have DEI. It just says the Wyoming taxpayer is not going to pay
for it. We're not going to pay for
it. That's pretty much, yeah. And that's pretty much what Ed Seidel, and I was hoping somebody from the university, at least the board of trustees or higher, would say. And Ed Seidel, the president of the University of Wyoming, said exactly that. We will find a way to fund this program because of all the extra money we get. And that puts me in a position of seeing a couple things. First of all, we don't care what the intent or the moral compass of Wyoming is. We're going to do what we want anyway. Secondly, we never needed your money, even though we asked for it, which proves they should be doing line item budgeting. If they're saying you took all the money for this department and said that we can't spend any public funds on this department, but we're going to do it anyway. The bottom line is you never needed that money in the first place, but you still had the balls to ask for it. And now you're going to find a way to spend around it, which you have plenty of money to do, private investments, all that other stuff. And third, it shouldn't stop at DEI. If that is the official position and posture of the University of Wyoming, all of these programs that either are problematic or not necessary to the proper education of students can be self-funded by the university. Hey, Department of Athletics, you're next.
No
Rainbow
kidding.
Service Center. They have all these different centers. What was the equity? DEI was an actual department, but they have these student centers all over campus. I believe one of them is called the Rainbow Resource Center,
right.
The Multicultural Affairs Center. I think there was five when I went to the University of Wyoming, and the only one of them that was self-funded through a private endowment was the Veterans Service Center.
Weird.
So all of these special group identity, even the veterans, that is, hey, I mean, it's quantifiable. We served in the military. It went a little off the rails. Now the children of veterans were considered veteran students, and I was glad I got out of there. But anyway, leave it to the university to even destroy your pride in being a veteran. But the only one that should have existed, because it is legitimate, quantifiable, and I believe federally and state mandated, was the Disability Service Center. So all these other groups, all these other programs, they can all be self-funded based on what Ed Seidel said. And I kind of predicted that hopefully that would be one of the comments, and it was. And then the only thing that's left on the table now is Governor Gordon has till the end of today, he actually has until tomorrow, but I doubt he'll work on Saturday, to either sign the budget as is, line item veto that portion out, and technically, I guess he could let the budget go into law without his signature, but I doubt that'll happen.
No, I don't think he would do that. But I do expect there to be a whole bunch of line item vetoes in the budget. There were so many things that were thrown in there at the last second. Well, not necessarily at the last second, but I mean, there was hundreds of amendments that were added to the budget. And I can't imagine that Governor Gordon is going to let them all go by. Though, you know, he is in his second term and he's in full-blown liberal mode. So, I mean, there's no reason to guess why he wouldn't do that. A couple of things. There was an article in the Cowpie entitled, "The University of Wyoming Won't Cut Diversity Program Despite the Legislature Defunding It." And there's a lot of interesting stuff in here that really shows you the direction that the Board of Trustees of the University of Wyoming want to take that school. And it's not in the direction that that I think everyday Wyoming citizens want to take it. One of these is by Trustee Carol Linton. And by the way, the Board of Trustees of the University of Wyoming, those aren't elected positions. Those are appointed. So every time we get a new governor, those board positions get reappointed, and it always ends up being the pals of whomever the person in the governor's mansion is. So one of those people Carol Linton. She said, quote, "I totally support what our DEI office does, and I think we need to have funding for it. If not funded for the legislature on a block grant, then it should be funded elsewhere." Okay, great. We agree with you, Carol Linton. If that's what you want to do with the university, go ahead. You know, we can deal with your we can deal with the political ramifications later. But there was one of them here, and this is Lauren McLean, a law professor at the University of Wyoming College of Law. Listen very carefully to what she said. Quote, "DEI means equality for all. But you can't have equality without equity. There's plenty of room here to keep doing what we do." All right, so there's a difference between equality and equity. The two things do not mean the same thing. Equality means it is in reference to how this country was set up, that everybody has equality of opportunity, that it doesn't matter what you want to be in your life, you have just as much opportunity as the next person to go do that. Equity is an economic term. Think about it when you take out a loan on your house and you've paid half of that loan off. Well, you have half the value of your house in equity. So when we're talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion, it is not equality that we're talking about. It is equity. That is equality of outcomes, not equality of opportunity. Those two are very different things.
Exactly. That's always my point. I equate it to a track and field race. When they say equality, what they mean is people starting further back than other people based on whatever matrix or metric they want to add to who gets to start where. And true equality is everybody starts at the same point, and based on your effort, merit, embrace of personal responsibility and merit, that's how you determine the end of the race. Whenever I hear the word equality nowadays, or even equity, I know what they're saying, which is we want to control and equalize the outcome. And in fact, it's not even the equal outcome. They actually want to advance people beyond the individuals with merit and ability in the end. It's not even from the just from the beginning. They want to make sure that, you know, we're some of the schools, I don't know if this happened at the university or even in Wyoming, but some schools wanted to have, we need to have a male valedictorian and a female valedictorian and a non-binary valedictorian and a Hispanic valedictorian. How about you just have the person that got the highest score?
Can we do that, please?
They pushed that narrative like crazy. And I think another thing I saw through all the stories on this in the last day, the narrative that was repeated was, well, the legislature and the people just don't understand what DEI is enough. And it's being demonized because of other things they hear going on in the country that aren't happening here at the university. And yeah, and that's how it's going to go until you can convince the rest of us and prove. And I still would take it with a grain of salt, what you're doing in that department. All we know is what we've seen and what is available, because when we go and look up your DEI website at the University of Wyoming and other websites related to the University of Wyoming, it's three card Monty. It's shuffling stuff around, trying to hide things from people, make sure that nobody wins the game except for the predicted winner. And so they're going to have to do a much better job before I even get close to getting on board with this, because, you know, we keep hearing the jokes. United Airlines decided that their main focus in their hiring season for 2024 was going to be diversity. That's who I want flying my planes.
Yeah.
The guy that didn't do as well. The guy that can't bring the plane in safely, but, you know, checks the block on their pie chart of, do we have enough colors, genders, and whatever represented in our employment class?
I've been following a number of, I'm sorry, Joey, go ahead and finish.
No, that was just about it, other than the point you made about these people are not elected on the Board of Trustees, and it is the cronies of whoever's governor at the time. And I like to bring the proof of that every time it happens. If you look on the Board of Trustees, former Speaker of the House Kermit Brown is on the Board of Trustees at the University of Wyoming. If you listen to the Senate confirmation hearings in the Wyoming Senate this year, former Speaker of the House Doug Chamberlain was appointed to the charter school task force or board or whatever. Mary Throne is on the Utilities Commission. These people all make a great deal of money doing it. I think Mary Throne makes about 140 grand a year sitting on the Utilities Commission. And these are places where you stick your buddies when they're done with office, and they don't do anything good for Wyoming. They're there because you know you can trust them or control them if you need to for your current political and economic plans. It has nothing to do with serving Wyoming, and it costs us. I don't know what the trustees at the university get paid, but I know it's a lot, and I know that a lot is spent on their behalf. Whenever the trustees were coming to the university when I got there, they would block off parking spaces. Certain meeting rooms were unavailable because of all the catering they did. It's a gargantuan waste of money, and there's no accountability in it.
I've been following a number of stories on the live program, all of them relating to colleges and universities. And, you know, when you talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, remember what Joey said, that it's making some people start further back in the pack, merely on the basis of superficial characteristics, the color of your skin, or if you happen to be a woman, or if you happen to have a different sexual proclivity. Well, it also encompasses grades. So I had this great story on, oh man, this was probably, this may have been before the session, but there was a study that looked into the grades that were given out at Harvard University. And it found over the past 5 years that 80% of the time, the grades given out at Harvard were A's. 80% of the grades given out were A's. There's a story in Washington that I think I covered on Monday's program, where now that's a state law that you don't have to pass the bar exam to be a lawyer. Now that's really the person that I want representing me. But this diversity, equity, and inclusion, it covers a lot more things than just race on college campuses. Last year in, I believe it was May, Cowboys State Politics did a big undercover investigation into some of the things that the University of Wyoming was doing through the Office of Multicultural Affairs and Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. And one of those was a drag show training. And in the drag show, and the video is available on my YouTube channel. You can still see the episode at, if you go to the website, Cowboys State Politics, or you can listen to the episode, you can't see it. But one of the things that was brought, that you can hear in the audio, and I think this is emblematic of this entire Office of Diversity and Equity and Inclusion. But one of the participants in this drag show training asked the presenter, well, what's your favorite part of doing this? And the presenter said, oh, I just love the children, getting their energy, getting them involved, and I just love them. And in the background, you hear the other presenter who is, and you can listen to, I mean, the whole video, a lot of what this guy says is, or girl, whatever he is, a lot of what he says is really, really profane. But when his partner says, I just love the children, their energy, getting them involved, you hear him in the background saying, F the kids. So the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion is involved in a lot more than just, race-based stuff. A lot of it has to do with sexuality. One of the things they don't bring up, and I haven't heard of anybody except me and everybody at the Independence Network criticize this, but at the University of Wyoming, we have a director of gender and sexuality. Why we need a director of gender and sexuality, I have no idea. Last time I checked, college students were pretty well versed in sexuality. So there's a lot of things that are happening at the University of Wyoming that Wyoming citizens are completely unaware of. And there has been a long-going battle in the Wyoming Senate trying to nail down the university on these things. It was, I believe, 2 years ago that Larry Hicks and Senator Sherry Steinmetz had basically an oversight hearing, and they drug the provost of the university in, asking him why some of the policies in their admissions office were based on DEI. that if you weren't part of this particular demographic, that you didn't get some of the services at the university. So there's a lot of things that are happening at the University of Wyoming that are directly under the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion and Multicultural Affairs that Ed Seidel, and of course it's not, they're not hiding it anymore. But just one final note, Joey, and then I'll shut up and let you dig into this. But Multicultural Affairs and DEI, a year ago, spent $1.7 million of your money. Just those two programs, $1.7 million.
Yeah, that's the real hook there. It's not just that this stuff is happening. It's happening. We're being lied to about it. It's being hidden, and we're paying for it. So again, no oversight. And this is exactly how our government is structured. Every department of the government is supposed to have oversight, at least economic oversight, by the legislature that controls that state or that political subdivision. And with the block grant and the nature of, oh, the university is our sacred cow, and then the strings, we talked about this a little bit yesterday on Crosstalk that'll air this afternoon. The strings attached coming with that federal money. Nope, that's not what's happening here in Wyoming. I don't think it's what's happening at a lot of state-funded universities. And I think the people of Wyoming have the right to stand up and say, hey, we demand these things. Now, it's going to take time, but we should have a publicly elected board of trustees. We should be able to revert the land-grant university back to being focused on industries and education that benefit Wyoming and the students, and I'm going to use the word equally, but right now, yeah, Wyoming's kind of been pushed to the background. It's just, no, we have to provide them with an education. Why? So they can take those Hathaway dollars that we made sure to sock away for them and then run off to Denver, LA, New York, wherever, once they get their education for free here. We do not need to prepare kids to be living out of state, especially if they're going to end up going to Harvard. Like with what you just said, the average grade given out at Harvard is an A. I'm not surprised at that. Not because I don't think they're grading on a proper scale. I think that they follow the Harvard standard. If you have a paper that's turned in that is an A-level paper, and then the Harvard standard is applied where that paper is plagiarized 500,000 times by every student, of course it's going to continue to be an A paper. It was written as an A paper, and none of the students ever changed it when they plagiarized it. So we definitely need, on many levels, more oversight, more interaction with our university. And if anybody wants to claim we're weaponizing the budgeting process, yeah, it's the only way to get their attention. It's one of my old standards when I was training soldiers. If you want to really make an impact and get your soldiers' attention, you take their time and you take their money.
Absolutely right. Now, there's one other aspect of this that we haven't touched on, and that's that whatever happens at the university trickles down to your public school, your K through 12, high school, and grade school. 73% of the teachers that are hired in Wyoming come from the University of Wyoming, and while I don't like the idea of saying that, you know, all teachers in Wyoming have studied under this DEI program and all of them are going to put this sort of stuff in the classroom. Your partner in crime, Tom Kelly, has a one of his, and you ought to ask him about this on your next episode, but one of the points he makes is that while you may not be teaching the principles that you learned or that you were taught from all of these DEI, multicultural affairs programs, you're still teaching from that mindset that you've spent 4 years of your college education listening to professors like Kathy Connolly tell you that, you know, there are 57 genders or whatever. I've got a soundbite somewhere where she tells Harriet that there, we've known for over 10 years that there are 51 genders. So if you're the teacher that has spent 4 years listening to that garbage, you're going to go to your Wyoming high school that you just got hired at, and whether you intentionally teach that way or not, that messaging is going to come through in your teaching because you've listened to it for 4 years, and really, there's no way that you can get away from it, unless, of course, you know, you're like-minded like we are, and you just refuse to do it. So all of that stuff trickles down, but If you listen to WEA President Grady Hutcherson, he claims that none of the stuff that you see in the mainstream media is even happening in K through 12 education. Now, I mentioned on Crosstalk, which again, the audience hasn't heard it yet, but that yesterday I taught a group of high school students and we got into a great discussion of what happens at high schools. And, you know, it's one thing for adults to talk about what's happening in our local high schools, but when you hear it from the kids' perspective, it's entirely different. But first, I'd like to play for you what Grady Hutcherson says. Now, again, Grady is the president of the Wyoming Education Association. Here's what he has to say.
But I also think it's time collectively for all of us to start pushing back against some of that ridiculous national rhetoric that Ms. Amon was talking about that we're seeing. This is Wyoming, and much of that nonsense has no place in Wyoming because it's not happening in Wyoming, and it has nothing to do with our phenomenal K-12 education system in Wyoming.
Now, he's right. It does have no place in Wyoming. There's no reason why we need to be teaching, you know, freshmen or eighth graders or sixth graders or any of them, really, all of the things that we're seeing with this LGBTQ agenda that's being pushed in Wyoming schools. But where Grady Hutcherson is lying about is this is absolutely happening in Wyoming high schools. I've broken several stories on Cowboy State politics that it's very clear that this sort of thing is happening in some Wyoming schools. It wasn't that long ago that I published the article of or the episode about a teacher at Cheyenne South High School showing the video Growing Up Trans. And I don't go out and watch that video. I mean, it's horrible. You don't want to put yourself through that. And then he handed out a quiz. And on the quiz were some very leading questions. You know, when did you first realize you were a boy or a girl? When were you first attracted to boys or girls? Very grooming type questions. So the assertion from the top at the University of Wyoming that DEI is misunderstood, and that's just not happening in Wyoming, down to the Wyoming Education Association, the teachers union, who they blatantly on their website have the Safe and Just Schools cadre, where they say that we're training teachers to become activists, and then it shows up in Wyoming schools, and we absolutely have proof of it. So, you know, I don't really care what Ed Seidel or any of the Board of Trustees say. They're full of crap. They are teaching this stuff at the University of Wyoming, and Wyoming citizens don't need to be paying for it.
Yeah, I would agree. And again, this points to the hypocrisy of the straw man argument. We hear it all the time. That's not even happening in Wyoming. And here we have the president of the WEA saying, not only is it not happening, but it has no place here. But every time you hear that argument, not only is there evidence that it is happening somewhere in Wyoming at some level, but the individuals that say it's not happening here. And in this case, I love that he said it. Other people allude to it, but Grady Hutcherson actually said it. It has no place here. They don't stand up and fight against it. They don't support any measures to stop it or make sure it doesn't, if it's not happening here, it doesn't ever get a foothold here. They say, oh, no, don't look behind the curtain. It's not happening here. We're just fine. No, you're not just fine. If it's really not happening here, then you should have no problem supporting all the efforts in the world to make sure it doesn't ever happen here in Wyoming. Another thing about the Wyoming Education Association, they fought against this publishing the curriculum for K-12 schools online so parents could, well, they're going to have to get on board with that because the next step, this stuff doesn't necessarily have to happen on paper. I'm talking about every classroom in the state of Wyoming. Hey, we need a live feed of what's going on in your classroom. It's transparency. I'm sorry that I'm not sorry. I get that there's going to be a million arguments against that, but parents need to know, hey, this is what they say they're teaching. We can now provide oversight of what's happening to our child on what they're actually teaching. And, you know, this is going to start affecting some school board races. Once you know, wait a minute, I'm paying taxes and voting for these people, and this is the result, things are going to happen. And that's eventually going to have to work its way all the way up to the university. And unfortunately, the reality is, and the only reason we're talking about this today, is the only way to get their attention or to get anything started is to mess with their money. That's all they care about. The proof is that all of the arguments, complaints, concerns that were put forward about DEI, gender studies, all these other things for years were poo-pooed and dismissed until we went after the money. And now it's, no, we need to educate the public better. You've had decades to educate the public better and be transparent on what you're doing there, and you haven't. So I see this as the beginning of a long, hard fight. I'll stick to what I said in week four. There's a possibility that Governor Gordon would just line item veto this anyway. But now we have evidence of the president of the University of Wyoming and the Board of Trustees saying, this doesn't say we can't have it. It just says that we can't use state dollars for it. We're going to pay for it ourselves. Good. That needs to be a universal posture. Start paying for a lot of things yourselves that don't benefit Wyoming, or like the athletics department, make enough money on their own to be self-sufficient, but you keep tapping the tax dollar or taxpayer for more dollars to pay for these programs. I get it. People love UW football, but there's no reason the taxpayer should be fronting $1 million a year as a base salary for a coach.
Yep.
Those programs produce money. Be self-sufficient. That's the Wyoming way. Don't live in debt and don't tax your neighbors. The university's been around over 150 years. I have to believe that with a school of business, a law school, engineering, all these other things, they would be able to find a way to operate in an efficient manner to where they become self-sufficient, which needs to be the goal for the university.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And the amount of money that's floating around that university from private sources really is pretty amazing. The Cowboy Joe Club, which if you drive around pretty much any Wyoming town, you'll see stickers in the back of pickups that say, you know, proud member of the Cowboy Joe Club. That's basically the you know, every high school in Buffalo, we had the Bison Boosters. You know, it's a bunch of private people that get together and they pay for, you know, new uniforms and T-shirts and all sorts of stuff like that. Well, the university has the same thing, and it's called the Cowboy Joe Club. And we're not talking thousands or hundreds of thousands or even millions. We're probably talking in the neighborhood of $100 million. You know, if you put all those private funding sources together, they would find a way to pay for whatever they want at the University of Wyoming. But the reason that they don't is the legislature is trained that whenever UW shows up, they pretty much get whatever they want. Not this session, but the last budget session and the general session before it. In fact, I think there was three sessions in a row where the university came up and said, we need $70 million more. And it was a rubber stamp. And $70 million. And I mean, that, and I say this a lot, Joey, that before you hang out at the legislature, you look at dollar numbers and you think, well, you know, $1,000, gee, that's a lot of money to me. And it's still a heck of a lot of money to me. But when you get to the legislature, you're not even talking thousands, you're talking millions and tens of millions and hundreds of millions. And pretty soon, $1 million doesn't seem like a lot of money. And the truth is, that's an extraordinary amount of money. Now, our representative Hageman, she had a committee meeting, and I didn't watch the whole thing, Joey, but from what I hear, she was talking about the whole women's or men and women's sports thing. You want to set this up for us?
Yeah, I think we have a sound clip here we're going to play in a second, but Harriet Hageman, I guess, gave testimony. She appeared on the committee. She wasn't testifying to the committee that was discussing the Olympics and transgenderism and the issue with the long, hard fight for women's sports to even exist now being invaded by a bunch of inferior males that can't make it anywhere else. So they have to go to the place where they would be dominant, which is women's sports. And the focus, I believe, on this hearing was whether we were going to allow or fund anything related to the Olympics if they allowed, I don't know what the terms are anymore, a transgendered woman, which is actually a man who thinks they're a woman. The term doesn't make sense to me. Anyway, so basically, if Caitlyn Jenner went back to the Olympics, he would have to participate in the male decathlon, is the point here. And I would agree wholeheartedly, and I think we can get into a lot of examples and scenarios where, hey, this, we have to deal with reality when it comes to certain things. Sports, safety, biology are some of those things we have to deal with the reality of, especially if we're funding it and, you know, regulating it through law. But let's go ahead and play that clip from Harriet, see what she had to say, and we can get into it here.
The bill we are here to discuss today is H.R. 7187, the Protection of Women in Olympic and Amateur Sports Act. The purpose of this legislation is simple. It modifies eligibility requirements for amateur sports governing organizations. Specifically, this bill adds clear definitions of men and women in the Ted Stevens Olympic and Amateur Sports Act. It further states that biological men cannot participate in competitions designated for biological women and girls. Ensuring equal rights for women has been a long and hard-fought battle. However, every day we are seeing egregious examples of men increasingly intruding into protected spaces for women. From female swimmers being forced to both compete and change in the locker room with the man who changed his name to Leah Thomas, to the recent decision by the USA Boxing to update their rule book to include a transgender policy, women and girls are being pushed aside and given no voice in the matter. A recent decision by USA Boxing is particularly troubling. In a sport where the purpose of the competition is to strike your opponent, USA Boxing is permitting men to punch women. Not only will women be forced out of titles and championships in boxing, but they will risk serious injury. Look no further than the tragic story of Peyton McNabb. In 2022, Peyton, now an independent Women's Voice ambassador, was a volleyball player competing at her high school in North Carolina. A man playing on the opposite girl's team spiked the ball into her face and head. And I would urge all of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle to watch the video to see what they are advocating for. Peyton was knocked unconscious and is still dealing with long-lasting injuries from this incident, including impaired vision and partial paralysis on her right side. To those who deny the existence of this issue, it is very real, and women and girls are getting hurt. The left will stop at nothing until women and girls' sports are erased and eradicated. Let me be clear. Congress must act to protect these rights and opportunities that women fought so long for. Let's take this common sense approach to protect women and girls. Thank you, and I yield back.
So the one that jumps out at me there, there's a whole lot of stuff in what Harriet said, but the boxing commissions, these are not just groups that willy-nilly make rules saying, yeah, it's okay, you can come in. No, you can't come in. Specifically, the boxing commissions in almost every state, they're the licensing authority. I watched a great documentary called Rocky Balboa once where he was trying to come back into boxing, and the commission. Yeah. Okay. Documentary, but it's a pretty solid, the scene where the boxing commission has their hearing. It's pretty true to life to what the boxing commission does, is supposed to do, and sometimes how politics plays into it. But their job is not just to license, oh, yeah, here's a license, you can have a fight over here. It's to license each participant and make sure they're following the standards for, are they evenly matched? Do they have the ability to defend themselves? Do they risk great bodily injury above the normal standard of boxing by engaging in this match? And in that documentary, they initially denied Rocky Balboa his license personally to fight just because of his age. And, you know, he made the argument, but that is the boxing commission's, or most of these sports commissions, responsibility is to make sure that every person on there can compete at a certain level with a certain amount of safety. With these, I'm going to call them DEI changes, and this pro, I don't know, gender bender, whatever crap they're going through, it puts its own participants, regardless of gender or assumed gender, in the position of experiencing grave bodily harm just through the regular practice of participation, above and beyond what you would normally expect. Professional athletes are exposed to injury all the time, but not at this level because of the biological differences. Now, you and I both agree, getting certain parts of your body chopped off and filling your body with hormones and drugs doesn't actually change your gender. And some of the evidence of that is when you have a biological male, regardless of what they've had cut off their body, and what drugs and hormones they've had put into their body, still have a different physiological makeup with massive upper body strength in comparison to females. This is not a who's better, who's worse. It's identifying the physical differences. So specifically in boxing, and she gave another example of a volleyball player, just a ball being spiked by a male with that superior upper body strength at the professional level caused irreparable damage to a woman who was legitimately playing the sport, and it's likely that that would have never happened if that ball was spiked by another woman who had less of that upper body strength. And I'm going to give a little credit to the Russians here. For years, they've had an extremely dominant women's wrestling and women's weightlifting team. But at least they did all that through steroids. They didn't do it by bringing men in, hacking them up and beefing them up and trying to pass them off as women. So I would agree with Harriet. I think it's getting to the point where all this wokeness and inclusion, it's getting dangerous.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. And the video that Harriet was talking about, I mean, it's pretty brutal. And if those two teams were evenly matched and it was just women on there, catching a spike in the face was probably not going to hurt that young woman all that much. Yeah, it probably would have smarted. If you play baseball, if you've ever caught a pop fly in the eye, that kind of hurts. But we're not talking about, you know, two teams being evenly matched. As you rightly pointed out, Joey, like men have massive upper body strength in comparison to women. And the truth is, your average dude is twice as strong as the average woman. There's a reason why penalties are so severe for men who beat their wives. How many times do we see articles, and maybe not that often anymore, but a couple years ago, there was a lot of articles where husband X comes home, beats his wife, goes to jail. Husband X comes home, beats his wife, kills her. The truth is that men are far stronger than women. And, you know, the boxing example is one that I find particularly egregious, because you're saying it's okay for men to whoop up on women. And not only is it morally wrong, not only is it ethically wrong, it's like literally dangerous. And so this has nothing to do with the fairness. I mean, I guess in a way it does have to do with the fairness part of it, but we're talking about seriously injuring people by allowing men to participate in women's sports. And and one of the best examples, and let's just talk about the sports for a second. Harriet's right that it was a long fought battle for women to even have sports in high school or in college. In Wyoming, it was particularly hard to get an equal number of activities for women. And I think if you talk to if you talk to Wendy Schuler, she might agree with you. She is one that ran the Fairness in Women's Sports Act. But any of them will tell you that it took a really long time to get any sort of, not equality, but equality in high school athletics. Now, of course, and here's an interesting question for you, Joey. Do you ever notice that you don't see a lot of women playing baseball? I mean, there are a few. Why do you suppose that is?
Oh, probably because the demands of the sport are not equated to their biological makeup. You know, the ability to do certain things at that level, even in college sports, it goes against the standard that started in the 90s of every kid gets to play a down. You know, just because you want to play baseball doesn't mean you're set up to play baseball. And physiologically, most women just aren't. And it's funny that you brought up the Title IX, the equality in sports opportunities, because I've never seen the UW female football team either.
Well, that's kind of where I'm going with this. But the reason why you have softball for women and baseball for men is that with baseball, it requires faster reflexes. You have a smaller target to hit. The speed of the ball is much higher. I think the last statistics I looked at, and if I'm right on this, I think I am, at 95 miles an hour, a pitch thrown at 90, you have a tenth of a second to decide to swing that bat. a tenth of a second. Now, I can't do that. And frankly, I wasn't very good at baseball anyway, even though I loved to play it. But the reason why you don't have a female baseball team is, like you said, the physical demands to play the sport are different for men and women. Now, softball, you've got a bigger target. The softball is at least 2.5 times the size of a baseball. So, you know, it's a bigger target, slower speeds. And so we have to get to a place where we can finally agree that men and women are different. And it's not to say that that's good or bad. It's just there are differences. It's a biologic fact. And it's certainly not to say that one is better than the other. It's just we got to get back to a place where we do away with all of this fantasy DEI stuff and get back to reality.
And there's already examples of that, other hard-fought battles. I don't know if I'm going to get totally on board with your, and I'm not a baseball guy like you are, your baseball-softball comparison. I pay a lot of bills for a lot of things that I do, and that may not be one that I want to pay on. I don't know why it's not just women's baseball and it's different. It might be the size of the target. I don't know. But what I do know is that I will stand solidly behind if a biological female can perform at the baseball level in college or, hey, I'm good with that. What I have a problem with is physiological and biologically different, and I'm sorry to say it, but physically superior for athletics individuals not being able to make the cut at the level they want to play and going down into a level that is set up for, hey, no, this isn't for you. And one of those hard-fought battles I was pointing to is we have the Special Olympics for a reason. Now, you're not going to have a world-class wrestler who just can't make it in the wrestling world get authorized to come down and start beating the crap out of handicapped kids. It probably would not fly, even if they identify as, oh, I've got ADD or I'm on the spectrum somewhere. So, you know, some of us are. Tom Kelly openly admits, I probably have a little bit of something screwy in my brain that would be considered a disability as well. But that doesn't mean I'm going to go beating up, you know, crippled kids just because, oh, well, that's where I can shine. And on that note, since, you know, the Special Olympics was designed specifically to have a playing field where these individuals can perform, succeed, excel, all that. And there's the argument that we heard it all session that transgenderism is a medical condition and these surgeries are life-saving and it's not just a mental thing, it's also a physical thing. Well, if it meets all those definitions, then why don't we have the Tranny Olympics? You are different and you suffer a medical condition. The people that, you know, support all your insanity continue to argue that it's a medical condition. Okay, fine. Here's a special place just for you, not to segregate, but to equalize and to allow the opportunity. I think if a biological woman wants to get into a boxing ring with a man and slug it out, they should be able to choose to. The problem is, in this case, they're forced to. Either go fight that man who pretends to be a woman or forfeit and give up all the hard work you've gotten to, you know, climb this hill based on this set of rules that just got changed. But if they want to go ahead and start the Tranny Olympics and let non-binaries beat the crap out of each other or do whatever, hey, go ahead and do it. That's not a problem. We already have an established example of that. The Special Olympics, the Paralympics, all these other things. Just put out what you identify as, the rules, the guidelines, all this other stuff, and knock yourself out over there based on the fact that 90% of the arguments here is, oh, transgenderism is a medical condition. Okay, fine. That's not a problem. Now this is how we deal with it. Stay out of dedicated women's sports.
So moving on a little bit, I see the governor has finally found his pen and decided to sign some of the bills. In fact, I think the deadline for signing bills is, like you mentioned, tomorrow. But he signed and line item vetoed a couple of tax bills. You want to tell us about those, Joey?
Wow, wrong button. Okay, yeah, actually all of the tax bills, I believe, have been addressed by the governor. The line item veto came to House Bill 4... Let's see. Oh, sorry. Yeah. House Bill 4 enrolled Act 52, which was the property tax refund program. And apparently the issues the governor had with that was the percentage of the, refund based on people's income. Even though he said he wanted to give another $20 million to the refund program, he really seemed to want to limit it, put a limitation on who was able to apply and then get that homeowner's property tax refund. And let's see, in his veto letter, he says, however, considering the legislature's other work this session and the interplay between all of the bills, I believe this bill extends just a little bit too far. So he cut out some of the eligibility and really brought it into a place where, you know, kind of like the ESAs we talked about, the lion's share will go to the people probably in Casper and Cheyenne, and the rest of us are kind of stuck with what's left. The big one was he vetoed Senate File 54 outright, and that was the homeowner's tax exemption. And it's interesting, not just that he vetoed it, but what he said in his veto letter. And that includes, this bill would have only provided a temporary and very expensive tax exemption to all Wyoming homeowners at the expense of other taxpayers in our energy industries, retail, and manufacturing sectors. Universal property tax ought to be universal, not simply advantage to property owners at the further expense of other taxpayers. Now, I got a little problem with that being the excuse. First, the only reason it would be a very expensive tax exemption is if the government refused to stop spending, which is exactly what we saw in this budget. What you bring in has nothing to do with what you spend. So when you say it's expensive, you're only talking about, well, we're going to hurt these other taxpayers, manufacturers, extractors, retail, because you're admitting if we have a shortfall on the property side for homeowners, we're going to claw that money back somewhere. There is a refusal to even consider reduction in spending. And ultimately, the governor admits that in his veto letter. The other thing that's interesting to me about that was when he says that further expense other taxpayers, let's see, universal property tax ought to be universal. Now, he uses that as an excuse to veto this bill, but on the same day, he signs into law House Bill 3, which is property tax exemption for long-term homeowners. So how is that universal property tax being applied universally if it's only for long-term homeowners who are over a certain age, who have paid property taxes for a certain amount of years? This guy continually shows his hypocrisy, and it almost has no end. And I'll tell you, all of the tax bills that we did get passed are exactly what I said. They pick winners or losers. There's gauges, and all of them have a sundown. So all of these excuses, it's only temporary property relief. It's not universal. I don't believe we had any bill that said universal property tax relief. It all said homeowners tax relief, homeowners tax exemption. So again, we got the minimal amount of property tax bills. The ones that would have best helped all Wyoming homeowners was outright vetoed. And the excuses the governor used to go ahead and veto these bills are contradictory to the other bills he signed into law.
One other thing he put in his veto letter, and I think this one is very, very, very reflective of the attitude that Governor Gordon and the Redcoats have about you. Listen to this, quote, "This bill could be considered an example of the electioneering exuberance of the recent legislative session. Feel-good policy that overcomes common sense. A sober assessment of what is Wyoming's best overall interest is called for, one which recognizes future generations should never have to pay for our own self-indulgence." So giving property tax relief to everyone is self-indulgence. As you pointed out, Joey, the governor is picking and choosing here. On the one hand, he says, oh, now it has to be universal. Everybody has to benefit. And then when it comes down to it, he picks winners and losers and then says that if you want property tax relief, well, that's your own self-indulgence. The second thing I'd like to point out is this dumb idea that giving a tax break costs something. We heard that over and over during the legislative session that, oh, well, this is going to cost us too much. It doesn't cost you anything. It just means you have to spend less, which spending is an expense. That's what costs something. I mean, it's absolutely backwards. And this is the same type of rhetoric that we hear out of Washington, D.C. from all of the radical left Democrats that say, well, we can't, you know, they talk about the Trump tax cuts. Oh, that cost us too much. We had to pay for the tax cuts. It's that same type of rhetoric, but it clearly shows you what these people view of what their view of Wyoming citizens is. It's absolutely outrageous.
Exactly. And the terminology, I love the fact that we have the sound clip of Ogden Driscoll standing on the floor of the Senate on another issue entirely, but saying, this is what Washington, D.C. does. This is how they do it. That's not the Wyoming way. But yet, all of their cronies on that elitist red coat side constantly, regurgitate, like you said, the Wyoming posture or the Washington, D.C. posture here in Wyoming. And the phrase, it costs us, really bothers me because, once again, it shows without directly saying it that they believe that that's their money. They believe they're automatically entitled to it as the government. This is your money that you pay the government to rent your own property for. Bottom line, there's no other way to explain it. You can add to that, but you can never get away from the fact that property taxes are you renting your own property or the right to own your property from the government. And it was never their money in the first place. We have got to start breaking this cycle, this belief, and it's going to take a lot to do it, that the government has the ability to make money in any way other than, like I say all the time, the way a mosquito makes blood, you got to draw it out of somewhere else, that when the government has that money, that it is actually their money. That's not true. That's still our money. You're administering our government on behalf of we the people in good faith. That's the structure. Now, it doesn't happen, but until we start attacking the phraseology and the mindset, we are going to continue to go further down this hill. That is not your money, Governor Gordon. That is not Wyoming's money. It is our money. And if you look at the budget, there was absolutely zero attempt to reduce spending to provide any tax relief to the people of Wyoming in this budget. But it doesn't matter because he got his $350 million for Go Green Gordon projects, which $350 million is more than all the tax relief bills together executed for every homeowner would not have cost us $350 million. But El Gordo got his, so why not screw the people and, you know, browbeat them into being self-indulgent? You want to talk about self-indulgent? Keep calling my money your money.
Absolutely. Here's one more from his veto letter. He calls one of the property tax relief bills wealth redistribution. Listen to this. The governor wrote, such a wealth redistribution scheme would be a socialistic type of wealth transfer, mostly from the energy sector to Wyoming homeowners. The Bidenomic type tax relief in this bill is what I would expect from Washington, D.C. liberals, not conservative Wyoming legislators. And he's talking about Senate File 54. So, I mean, there is a big problem with language here. And Joey's exactly right. You know, we have to get past this point where we view the Wyoming taxpayer as an ATM, which is exactly the view of the Wyoming caucus. I'm still looking for the soundbite. I know that somebody in this session said, "Well, it's not their money; it's ours." Well, no. It's exactly the opposite. It's our money. It's the money of Wyoming citizens. It doesn't belong to the legislature or to Mark Gordon. And again, I'll repeat what you said, Joey. That $350 million that was given to Go Green Gordon, that's more than all of the tax relief combined. We've got about, let's see here. We've got about 30 seconds left, Joey. You want to wrap us up?
Yeah, again, thanks everybody for tuning in. Make sure you're sticking around. We got a full schedule again today on Friday. I'm going to do a little wide right turn at 11 a.m. Cowboy State politics coming up right after this show. And then we have a brand new episode of Crosstalk Live. I believe that's starting right at about noon after Paul Harvey. So stick around and make sure you're tuned in to the Independence Network right here.